Basically, there's an idea in the Middle Ages called nominalism. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Okay, so nominalism is the idea that there are only names to things, not essences. So there's no human nature. There's no dog nature. When we talk about natures or classes or sets of things, we're not giving an ontological or metaphysical status. We're just simply classing things together linguistically in a set. The Middle Ages and the ancient world, the time of Paul or the church fathers, they thought very differently. They thought that things have natures, they have essences. And so the words aren't just terms or nominal namism. They actually describe what's really there in them metaphysically. Okay. So there is human nature. And in Orthodox theology, Christ assumes.
Who would deny that?
In the Middle Ages, it begins with people like William of Ockham. So Ockham is the first nominalist. And
the man with the razor.
Exactly. He's known for that. And he challenges some kind of established ideas of like essential. It's called essentialism, that things have essences. And so he also goes up against this idea of universals, that there's no such thing as a universal class or essence of a thing. And that had been kind of the norm since Plato and Aristotle as well. But so you get a denial of essentialism and essences, and then you get another guy named Gabriel Biel, and he's very influential on Martin Luther. And so when the Reformation kicks off, there's this debate about how could you be called righteous if you're not, in fact, righteous? So if as a human being, you are, you know, menstrual rags, as Isaiah says, as the Reformer said, then how could God call you righteous without being a liar? What enter in nominalism, and nominalism is able to say, because things don't actually have essences, they just have names. And so if God calls you that, you are that legally, even though in actual fact you're wicked. So that was, and Luther was very happy to utilize that nominalistic approach. And by the way, this is not just my theory. There's famous Lutheran scholars. There's a book called Harvest of Medieval Theology by Heiko Obermann. And the whole thesis of that book by a Lutheran is that Luther had to use nominalism. So we're also, though, moving away not just from theological squabbles, but the idea that things have natures. And this is how we get to David Hume and Kant and these Enlightenment figures, which give us the, scientific revolution, supposedly. This is how we get to there's no male and female. So you can see kind of the logical train here. If things don't have essences, well, then they don't actually have genders, right? Objectively, because everything is just a name. So I can just name myself he, him, zer, ze, it, right? I'm not trying to go too fast or too far in the sense of like
you're
theology,
not.
But I'm saying there is an ideological sort of progression that you can get from nominalism to where we are now with postmodernism and then with essentially.
It's interesting that an adult could believe in something like that. I mean, having lived your life, known people, known animals, seen nature, and arrive at the conclusion that nothing has an essence, everything is just what we call it, like that flies in the face of your experience. It has to, right?
What's that saying that you have to be an academic to be really stupid?
Yeah, right? I guess that's right.
Yeah, to be indoctrinated into believing some sort of. I remember Terence McKenna. Do you remember the psychonaut Terence McKenna? I remember reading him one time and he said something like,
this is all just magical thinking, this, if you take the shroom, you're going to see that things don't have essences, that things just have names and you just change the name. And I'm like, that's the gender idea right there.
So that's Jay Dyer on with Tucker Carlson. Just incredible to see. Always awesome to see friends of the show, friends of the network blowing up and doing even better. So I haven't actually gotten to see the whole episode because it just came out today and I was doing my news gathering. I haven't gotten to watch it, but that was just one of many clips flying around there. So congratulations to Jay Dyer, and hopefully a lot of people wake up from his, I'm sure, extremely powerful Tucker Carlson appearance there. We're going to get into all sorts of crazy stuff in the next hour. We'll report a little more on Lady Graham, the late Lindsey Graham, as well as what's going on in Europe and our desperate attempts to solve problems that don't exist while continuing to manufacture very real problems that are destroying us completely, holistically, comprehensively, from the inside out. Yeah, we got a lot still to cover, folks. Stay tuned. The videos I'll show you on the other side, you'll not want to miss. Go to theoxygenstore.com/Harrison to support us, and we'll be back in 90 seconds. Don't go anywhere.
Fellow Americans, I'm back. The Nixon 28 collection is now available, and I must say, it looks tremendous. Go to the AliceJonesStore.com and pick yours up today. You'll be glad you did. Ultimate Power Drink Mix. The fantasy is real, and it's delicious. Visit the AlexJonesStore.com today.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. You know, I'm hesitating here because I'm about to do something I'm not very comfortable with, which is brag, which is maybe brag a little bit, partly because I'm not even really sure if I'm responsible for this, but I'm pretty sure I am. And I just, you know, for one thing, it's nice knowing that I may very well have a sizable impact on the wider, you know, discussion overall. Basically, if you are a regular viewer of this show, I really hope, because the thing, all right, I don't really know how to explain this, but like there are so many things that I cover that then suddenly become giant topics like 2 weeks later. And it's like uncanny. It's like kind of weird how much it happens. And it used to be a regular joke with like Tucker Carlson would be like, I would cover something. And a week later, he would say exactly the same thing as me verbatim. It's kind of nice. On the other hand, I'm like, are they getting this from me? Because here's the thing. I know where I'm getting my information from. I know where I'm getting my inspiration from. Are they getting it from the same source or are they getting it from me? So let's go to clip number 40 here. I'm not going to try to take credit for this, but I kind of am. Let's watch.
There's a great book out there if you want to find out more about this. I think it's called Rise and Kill First. It's based on the philosophy of the Mossad that strikes first on this, and it's excruciatingly detailed. And you can see when they execute on this. We've got Kurt Mills.
All right, so that's Steve Bannon's War Room. Encouraging you to go read Rise and Kill First. Well, why did that book come to his mind? Why is he talking about that book, I wonder? Because I know why I brought up the book. I brought up the book about 3 weeks ago and have been doing a series on it for NXR on Off Limits News that you can find on YouTube. And suddenly he's talking about Rise and Kill First. I thought about the book because having read it years ago, I then heard Benjamin Netanyahu say the term rise and kill first. And I thought, oh, I know. I'll use this clip of Benjamin Netanyahu saying this in order to start a discussion on the book Rise and Kill First, which are only related because they both, you know, invoke that phrase. Maybe Steve Bannon was equally inspired. Maybe. But this is the type of thing I mean where I go, you know, there are some things where I kind of see it entering into the zeitgeist. And maybe I start covering it but that's me seeing it elsewhere and then starting. But for Rise and Kill First, I didn't see anybody else talking about this book. I heard the phrase and I decided to talk about the book. Let's go now to clip number 30 here.
So let's talk about this Israel thing. Huh? Personally, when I look at the evidence, when I read books like this one, which is an Israeli written history of the history of Mossad and their targeted killing programs. It's an extremely extensive volume because there's a lot of history of Mossad's targeted killings. Let's just say that. When you actually learn your history about the world's foremost assassination nation, the country that assassinates more people than all other countries combined, literally, the country that has built its entire military sort of power projection on assassination specifically, built their entire intelligence apparatus on targeted killings specifically. Well, once you actually know your history about all that, you actually know where the leadership in Israel came from and the things that they've done to gain power and the things that they are willing to do to keep it. It does remind you of this text message chain that was a hoax until Candace published it. Jewish donors play into all the stereotypes. I cannot and will not be bullied like this, leaving me no choice but to leave the pro-Israel cause. This was sent to Jewish donors. This was sent to the big dogs. This was not some idle conversation with his friend. This was sent directly to the one people that would be offended by it. This was him playing ball. And by the way, in it, he says, "We won't cancel Tucker. I'm thinking of inviting Candace." And he's losing millions of dollars over that decision. And he's pissed. But then it makes you think about messages like this. April 3rd, 2025. It's going unnoticed because so much other news is happening, but the war drums are beating again in DC. The warmongers worry this is their last chance to get the white whale they've been chasing for 30 years, an all-out regime change war against Iran. A new Middle East war.
We can take this out. So that's Ian Carroll, and he's talking about the assassination of Charlie Kirk, which, you know, more has come out from that, and we'll address that in just a second. But of course, he starts off that by holding up the book Rise of Cold First. Now, that one I don't have to speculate on because Ian literally texted me. He's like, "I watched your episode on Rise of Cold First and I bought the book, and oh my God, this is amazing." So the reason I'm saying this is because if you're a member of this audience, it's got to feel kind of weird because it feels weird to me. It feels weird to me. And if you're a regular everyday viewer, I really hope that you also recognize this, because part of me feels a little bit crazy. Part of me is like, I cannot be the one actually causing it. But like, how many people have you heard, you know, refer to attacks on America by Israel as, you know, the Eighth Front, that type of stuff? The point I'm making is, while, you know, the history of InfoWars and Alex and the Alex Jones Network and everything, I mean, we, and when I say we, I mean mostly Alex and people that came before me, sort of created, established the modern right-wing ecosystem. Like, the technology, we were the first to adopt it, but the stances, you know, Alex was sort of the first to really elucidate and solidify all of them, from the Maha to the anti-war movement. I mean, but still, like, this is in no way over. We are still, and weirdly, I feel like I, to a very outsized degree, are still, like, shaping the conversation that's going on. Again, this makes me uncomfortable. I feel like I start to cringe when I'm like, I am responsible for all of this. But, like, no, but I actually am, though. But you actually are, by giving me this platform. We actually are dictating the course of the conversation moving forward. And, again, you know, what happens, I get this kind of bittersweet feeling where I'll see Tucker Carlson do a big long thing about MAID and, you know, the slow but sure introduction of medically assisted suicide in America. And I'm like, good, he's talking about it. But I'm also like, we have been talking about this for so long. And it must be nice for the audience just knowing, like, you can just watch the Alex Jones Network and literally be months ahead of everybody on everything, on absolutely everything. Months ahead and on the right side. And so this also relates to the Charlie Kirk assassination and the trial that's been going on, because literally I was just like doing other stuff. It was Friday or Saturday. So I was doing other stuff and I was off, and I got a comment from somebody being like, "This must be a terrible day for you." And I was just like, "I'm having a great day. What is he talking about? What could he possibly be talking about?" I'm like looking through the news. I'm like, did something happen with Alex Jones Network? Like, no, nothing happened with that. I'm like, why would this be a terrible? It literally took me a minute to be like, oh, he thinks I'm like a Israel did it, you know, Tyler Robinson is a total patsy type guy, and that I would be devastated by the fact that video was released of the shooter shooting. And it's like, it literally took me like 5 minutes to be like, what is he talking? Why does he think anything would, there's no bad news today. Like, and then I was like, oh, okay. He thinks I'm like somebody who's pushing for Tyler Robinson to be a total patsy. When I've been abundantly clear, and to be honest with you, I went back and I watched a bunch of footage from like the days after Charlie Kirk was murdered. And like, we nailed it on day one. Like, we nailed it on day one. I basically haven't changed my perspective ever since then. And anytime anybody brought up conversations about devices and all this stuff, you know, I'm always a little bit of two minds. You know, I would always say that Israel was always, you know, once I thought about it for a little bit, definitely shot up to the top of the suspect list, but also acknowledging that if they were to have had a hand or somehow involved, we would never have evidence of that. And I would never expect there to be evidence of that. I would be shocked if there was. The other thing was that from the first second, you know, we saw the footage, it was obvious to me that the shooter had been in an elevated position, more or less where the shooter was alleged to be. And that was because the first video I saw was from an up, you know, elevated position. And the moment the shot went off, everybody turned and looked at where the sound of the shot came from. And they all turned and looked right at the building where the shooter was supposed to be. And what happens in conspiracy theorizing is people will sort of take a misstep initially, and then they'll start sort of building up theories on top of that initial misstep instead of just going back and going, wait, wait, this doesn't make any sense. So it'll be like, you've got the gunshot and you've got Charlie Kirk getting hit. Then there was some suspicion about a, you know, a device used, an explosive device. Maybe the microphone had explosives in it. Now, there's precedent for this, not just what Israel did to Hezbollah with the pagers, but look, they have a very long and storied history of packing explosives into electronic devices and setting them off. So it's worth it to talk about that. It's worth it to discuss that. It's worth it to say, look, this might sound crazy, but crazier things have happened. Let's look at examples in history where this exact type of device was used. Now, whether it was used here or not, I don't think it was, but, you know, it's actually not the craziest idea. The crazy part is, why would you have a shooter in position with a rifle taking a shot if you had an explosive microphone? That doesn't make any sense. But then people start, like, they just sort of go off that premise and they go, well, you would have the guy shooting the rifle to distract from people to make you think that it was a rifle shooter in order to draw attention away from the, you know, explosive device. And it's like, no, 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 this doesn't make any sense. Go back, take a step back. If you're going to go through the trouble of putting somebody with a gun in a position from which they could snipe, why would you not just have them snipe him? I mean, put yourself in the mindset of somebody planning this op. You're going to put somebody in a sniper's nest. You're going to have them actually make a sound, shoot a gun, something that makes noise and causes people to look. And then you're going to have a microphone explode, but it's got to look exactly like a gunshot because there's going to be a million video, you know, cameras filming this. So it's got to be perfect. And it also has to happen the instant that the gun goes off. You can't have a millisecond of, you know, that would have been weird. Pow. You know, you can't have that. It's got to be the instant. All of these variables, every one of which makes pulling something like that off successfully many, many times less likely to actually get pulled off. Every one of these, you know, developments in the plan would be another fail point. So it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I saw with my own eyes the video of the gunshot going off and everybody in unison at the same time in a way that seemed perfectly natural, looking right towards where the sniper's nest would be. So that gets locked in for me, that I know for an absolute. And then, of course, there was video of the guy on the roof. There's video before the shot. There's video after the shot of the guy running across the roof that was caught in that pan across of the big crowd. And then you've got the footage of the guy jumping off the roof. So, like, we know a guy was there on the roof. That you can lock away, you can establish that as an absolute fact. Everything else that you come up with or fantasize or theorize about has to comport with that. And so, yeah, if you're going to, you know, have this guy as a distraction, so the real guy, it just doesn't make any sense. In the same way that I've that I think about the 9/11 conspiracy theories or anything else. It's like, if I'm sitting here planning, am I really going to absorb all of the risk of we're going to hijack a plane, then we're going to land the plane in a military base, then we're going to gas the people, and then we're going to fake phone calls? Or am I just going to fly a plane into a building? I'm just going to fly a plane into the building. I might have explosives in the building, so I guarantee it goes down. I might have, you know, there's lots of different things to it, but why would you have somebody sneak onto the roof, lie in a prone position, take the shot, but then actually none of that was even necessary? It doesn't make any sense. Assassinations are not carried out that way. The way they're carried out is you have the guy shoot him. That actually answers all these questions. The only shortcoming that I ever saw in the sort of official theory, now whether it was Tyler Robinson or not, that gets into different questions. And you can, you know, obviously speculate wildly about that, and there's lots of reason to, in my opinion. But you've got the guy there taking the shot. It's not that complicated. It's not that hard. And the only thing that was missing was the fact that a 30-06 should have blown his head off, and it didn't. And so I said over and over, that's the only missing piece there. But that could easily be filled in by, you know, a frangible round, some sort of soft tip round like that. This was always my stance. And so while you could have watched, I mean, literally you could have watched 24 hours of content a day since the day Charlie died, and you can speculate about all sorts of different angles. And I've reported on pretty much all of the big developments, the Google searches in Israel, the suspicious planes turning off their transponders. All of that is worth looking into, but none of it altered the fact that there was a gunshot from an elevated position the instant that Charlie Kirk got hit in the neck by something. And that's what we're starting with. So everything else, if it contradicts that or makes that reality, you know, too complicated to understand, then it's got to be thrown out. It's got to go away. And what you're left with is just like the absolute provable, I saw with my own eyes facts, and then you build up from there. So the point of all of this is, like, I don't know what other people are talking about. I don't know what they're speculating about. I watch their content and I'm just like, what are we even doing here? You can watch my coverage from Charlie Kirk the first week that it happened, and my positions basically haven't changed. Anything major that's come up. Now, the one wrinkle in all of this, let me say one more thing. Because a lot of people also, they get very mad at Nick Fuentes for buying the official story. Do people not understand the personal incentives Nick Fuentes might have for wanting the official story to be true? I'm not even saying this is a conscious thing for him necessarily, or even that this is really, I think he's perfectly capable of explaining his own position. I think it's a perfectly reasonable one. But do we understand that Nick Fuentes was like the primary number one antagonist of Charlie Kirk for like years? And that I guarantee you those like 33 hours after Charlie Kirk's murder were the most anxiety ridden of Nick Fuentes's life? Because I guarantee you Nick Fuentes was sitting there for the entirety of the 10th and 11th of September just being like, please, please don't be a Groiper. Please, for the love of God, do not be a Groiper. Just please, because that would have destroyed everything. I mean, that, you know, they would have like put Nick in jail if it had been a follower of his that did it. So you don't think he might have had some personal reason to, but people are just like, he's just buying the Fed slop. I'm like, no, dude, he has his own unique perspective on this. Again, I don't think he's being dishonest, and he's just like, I'm going to say it's Tyler so they don't think it's me or anything like that. I just think you got to understand the perspective that he's operating from. And it makes, you know, perfectly his reaction makes perfect sense once you do that. And of course, they tried to make him a MAGA Groiper anyway. So my role here and my purpose here is to try to get to the truth and try to see things other people aren't seeing. I was the only one who reported on Charlie Kirk's break with Israel while it was happening. I was the only one who noticed that he seemed rather nervous about how angry some of his Jewish supporters were getting. I was one that actually tweeted out. And other people are like, you have to go on the stand. What if they call you to trial? I'm like, I'll go testify. What do you think you're going to learn? This is another thing I don't understand. People are like, you have to tell us who told you that Charlie Kirk said that he feared Israel would kill him. And it's just like, why? What do you think you're going to learn from that? The thing that happened is Charlie Kirk said he thought Israel was going to kill him. That's where the information came from. Who he told that to, who then told me, why would that matter? I really don't understand why that would matter. If somebody was making threats to Charlie and I was withholding who was making threats to him, okay, yeah, now I'm a barrier to finding justice. But Charlie Kirk says, I think Israel's going to kill me. To one of his friends, that friend tells me, I tweeted out, and it's like, we have to know who that friend is, but why? It wouldn't actually elucidate anything. Let's just say, what if I told you it was Candace Owens' husband? He told me. What does that change? What does that matter? What if I told you it was Charlie Kirk's sister? She told me. Why does that matter? Neither one of these people are the people, by the way, obviously. But this is what I don't get. It's like, maybe you got to leave the conspiracy theorizing to the professionals here, because you're hyper-focused on things that don't actually matter, that don't actually have an impact on what the outcome of the conspiracy would be. I'm trying to teach you how to think. I'm trying to teach you how to look at this stuff and dissect it effectively and appropriately, and to understand certain things we'll just never know. Certain things we can know for an absolute fact, and we can't, you know, be driven one way or the other from those things. And I say this because I feel bad for a lot of the people that like put their reputation, put their lives on the line saying, you know, there's absolutely no way it was Tyler Robinson. I never said that. I said, look, there's a lot of suspicious stuff about this. I think we still have some unanswered questions. But here's the real twist in all of it. Because when I look at the evidence that's been presented, it seems fairly convincing. When I hear the reports of what the reporters say they saw, and I'll show you a video in just a second, I'm inclined to believe them. But then I think back to the first weeks after Charlie Kirk was murdered. And I remember hearing and never heard any information of the contrary, and since then have had it confirmed that people in the Trump administration, people in the highest rungs of the intelligence apparatus, people in the Senate, in some of the most important and sensitive committee hearings, all thought Israel had a hand in Charlie Kirk's murder. They all did. And when you look at it like that, you know, maybe some more of the actions of Cash Patel and the like make more sense, start to click together. And so while it's like, I can't prove that Israel had a hand in it, I can't disprove that Israel had a hand in it, I'm inclined to believe the official story, except I know from personal, firsthand, multiple sources that there were discussions in the White House and the Senate, like Armed Services Committee, and that the people in the highest rungs of our government were convinced that Israel had a hand in Charlie Kirk's murder. Not because I said anything, because of information that they had. So I can't just throw that out. I can't just say, you know, there's absolutely no validity in that, because I know I heard personally from firsthand sources that people in the intelligence community were convinced Israel was behind it. Take that for what you will.
A microscopic tag being planted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Collins saying 21 years ago that, oh yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha ha ha, wonder to put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more, scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah.
That's
good. Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting that at the base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health, what it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Last week, during the preliminary hearing of Tyler Robinson, in the case of the murder of Charlie Kirk, there was about halfway through the week, the prosecution was asked, is there a video of Tyler Robinson taking the shot? And they said no. If you remember watching the show at the time, I was sort of flabbergasted at this, going, but we know they have the footage. But we see the shot. We know you can see him going there. You can see him walking away. What do you mean they don't have the video? They must have the video footage. That would be crazy if they didn't have the video footage. Now, apparently they did, and they showed it. I have seen some differing perspective on this. I saw other people that were in the courtroom basically say, you really couldn't tell anything from the video. It was that same very, you can see a guy take a shot, but you can't see anything, really. I mean, it's the same footage that we've had. However, a lot of other people there were saying that the video was very clear. And it was so clear, it caused them to have an emotional reaction equivalent to the first time they saw the original footage of Charlie Kirk being murdered. Here's Jack Posobiec on what he saw in the courtroom.
I think everything's been proven. I think it's proven. It's, I would say, beyond probable cause at this point. I think that the question for me is how do you even get reasonable doubt when there's so much evidence? But the thing that I do just have to say is that I know that you know, you guys watching on live stream couldn't see the last video that was shown. Well, it wasn't edited. It was zoomed in.
Yeah.
It was zoomed in from the surveillance video off campus, and specifically the part of, you know, the Losi Center, the roof, and you see everything. You see everything. He climbs over, he assembles the gun, he runs over to the edge, you know, gets down in a prone position, and you see the time, and we all know what time, and it was like so slow, just watching those seconds click, 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 and then you see him take the shot. And he takes the shot and then immediately runs. And we've seen that video already, but I knew we were going to watch that, but I wasn't prepared to see this side of what happened because we'd never seen it before. We saw the other end of the shot, obviously, but this was a whole other level of just evil, and I got very upset watching it, and obviously the family was very hard for them to watch, and I looked over and I saw Tyler wasn't even looking. He wasn't even looking. See what he did. And I would just say that I do wish, the public could see that. I hope that video is made public, not because I want it to happen. I didn't want any of this to happen. I hate all of this. I hate being here. But people need to see what happened. People need to see the other side of this, because this is a case. We need to see the truth. We need to see the facts. And this is, it's the video of the sniper taking the shot. It is exactly what you think it would look like, but it's one of the hardest things I've ever had to watch, probably since the initial, when this happened, the first video.
All right, so that was Jack Posobiec's response, and I heard, you know, similar responses from others like Benny Johnson who were there. And some people were saying, you know, you can tell it's Tyler. It's just like undeniable. I can't wait to see it ourselves. And I gotta say, my disappointment in the way that everything was handled after Charlie Kirk's murder is truly immeasurable. And it's such a bummer that it went so far off the rails. And this really should never have been something that was so difficult to comprehend, that, like, even if we never found out who murdered Charlie Kirk, even if it was Israel, no matter who it was, what the murder revealed was this incomprehensible, vicious, violent, seething hatred of the left towards right-wingers. And no matter who killed Charlie Kirk, and I said this over and over, I don't understand why, again, this had to be so complicated. I don't know if Israel killed Charlie Kirk or not. What I do know is that Charlie Kirk's assassination should have immediately and ruthlessly been used as an excuse to cripple the left in this country. Why wasn't it? And part of me thinks that one of the reasons that this wasn't used to take on the left probably had something to do with the fact that people at the top of our government thought it was Israel and couldn't bring themselves, I guess, to like be like, this was the left and we have to round up the left when they knew otherwise. I don't know if that's the case or not, but you tell me why Kash Patel, Dan Bongino, who was there at the time, and all these people didn't seize on this event, Charlie Kirk's killing, to actually do anything to the left. It only empowered them. They learned that there are no consequences. And going back and watching our coverage from that first week, it just like hit me all over again. Because as much as I remember those early weeks, seeing it again, we'll go to this video now. This is from one day after Charlie Kirk was murdered. And this went on for weeks, folks. But on the first day, first 24 hours after his murder, there were like 300 examples an hour of leftists mocking and celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk. And at the time, like, it's almost embarrassing because you go back and you watch the video and it's like everybody on our side was so angry, was so pissed off, and was so like, we were like ready and excited. We were like, okay, this is it. Like, these people are going to pay these jackasses. And there's this whole giant movement of people exposing these people for making these things and getting them fired from their jobs as they absolutely deserve. You know, this wasn't she called the cops on a black guy because his dog was attacking her. And now she gets fired. This was, wait, you're in charge of children and you're gleeful that a father was shot in the neck because you saw one out of context clip where he talks about DEI, therefore he deserves to die. We had such an obvious and brilliant opportunity to deal with these people. The only thing that's happened is these people, if they even lost their jobs, are now millionaires because they sued and won, got their jobs reinstated, and have been paid millions of dollars from taxpayers. Out of all of the disappointments of the Trump administration, this might have shot to the top of my list when I really started thinking about it, when I really went through the videos and was watching how everybody, myself included, were feeling after Charlie's assassination and knowing that none of it happened. Nobody was rounded up. No arrests were made. No investigation into the foreknowledge that people displayed by tweeting about the fact that Charlie Kirk would be assassinated that day. The only thing that even remotely happened was after a different event, Antifa was declared a domestic terror organization. Nothing happened from that. So when you think about the midterms coming up and the failure of the Trump administration to do anything, every time you hear Trump talk about communist or the DSA, just remember that he was handed on a silver platter every excuse he needed to end their participation in our political experiment, and he didn't take it. He did nothing. So I don't want to hear complaints. And I remember that I didn't include the clip in this, but on September 11th, the day after, I was like, look, I'm a constitutionalist, but if Donald Trump came out today and said, we are hereby declaring Antifa illegal, here's 5,000 names I've prescribed, you can get $10,000 for turning one of these people in, I'd be out there with a big net scooping up Antifa and you wouldn't hear a peep from me about freedom of speech or anything else because they just murdered Charlie Kirk. So we have to do something about this. Again, not that like, see, I want to not be hampered and burdened by the Constitution in our effort to save the Constitution. And the Constitution's number one existential threat at this moment are the legions of psychotic, radicalized leftists deliberately and openly trying to destroy the United States. So we need to do something about that to save the Constitution. We have to stop them from participating in our political process. We had a perfect excuse to do any number of things that would have helped in that regard. We did absolutely none of them. Here's a little compilation from September 11th, just a tiny, tiny little selection, tiny little smattering of just some of the endless outpouring of hatred, vitriol, and death wishes from our friends and neighbors in the Democrat Party. Let's watch.
Just think about the mindset of this person.
You support Charlie Kirk being killed?
Yes, I do.
On the day he died, you're here at a vigil for Charlie Kirk, and you support his death.
Do you support a Nazi?
No, I don't support a Nazi. Charlie Kirk wasn't a Nazi. You support his shooter?
Yep, sure I do. Free him.
Oh, I do TikTok for a living. You should be in jail. Like, that guy should be in jail. Something has to be done to these people. I mean, if nothing else, they at least have to be scared to voice that, right? I'm okay living in a country where these people exist because you can't control people's thoughts, but they should be scared of ever expressing anything like that. That guy's not scared. The guy's advertising it. He's being filmed. He knows he's being filmed. He's in public with his face, and he's saying, yeah, I would have killed Charlie Kirk if I could have. He didn't seem crazy. He didn't seem schizophrenic. He seemed radicalized. He seemed like a Democrat. He seemed like a liberal. Charlie Kirk was just shot in the neck in Utah then.
I have to sweeten my delivery to make it work for
Charlie
Todd.
Charlie Kirk got shot. She's dancing.
I mean, who is Todd?
These are faces. These are their accounts. We have to destroy their lives. Not because they have a different political opinion, because they are openly violent. Obviously. And we could play hours of these videos. They're all over the place. But again, you've got leftist retards on TikTok. That's not breaking news. But what about how widespread this is? What about that you also have congressmen in our government interrupting a moment of silence for Charlie Kirk? So he's asking for a moment of prayer. So they say no.
Let's Wait a minute.
Oh, but it's both sides. Oh, but both sides just really need to tamp down the rhetoric. No, the left is evil and insane and needs to be crushed with the force of the state. Here, again, just more videos. Very normal looking people. People you'd see on the street. You'd think they're nice. You'd think they're loving and giving. You don't know. You're dealing with a vampire. You're dealing with a hologram. You're dealing with a shapeshifter. They're not human beings. These people don't have souls. These people are worse than animals. Inside their heart is this seething mass of tar, just dripping with putrescence. These people are sick in the head. And it's almost more disturbing how normal they look.
Bitches, let's all join hands and bow our heads in thoughts and prayers for Charlie Kirk. Thoughts and prayers for Charlie Kirk. Thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers.
In the midst of all of this, and just, you don't have to look for it. It's not something we have to uncover. In the midst of this outpouring, this public demonstration of evil, of vile hatred against somebody who never hurt anybody ever, the Democrats are still blaming right-wing rhetoric for the death of Charlie Kirk.
Not everyone took to his words or his rhetoric. You know, at times, they were offensive to specific communities. But with that said, this is not the time to focus on that. We are focused on this tragedy. Speaking of this tragedy, is this a moment for your party to reflect on political violence? Is it a moment for us to think about the responsibility?
Well, let's pause it.
Political leaders.
Whoa. Is this time for our party to reflect on political violence? Yeah. Oh, we're reflecting on political violence. We're really understanding that it doesn't matter how nicely we treat you people. It doesn't matter how considerate we are. It doesn't matter how normal and loving and generous somebody is. You just killed Charlie Kirk. And you're going to ask us if our party is reflecting on the violent rhetoric? On political violence? Let's go back. Let's see what else this... What do we do about this? What do we do? We're not convincing this... They live in a delusional world of psychopathy. I want freedom of speech. And we can't have it when you get murdered for your speech. So what do we do? So what do we do?
5 o'clock Eastern. Janet.
Wait for it. Go. They just received the news. Cheering.
Go to, have somebody look at the Fox. Trump just posted that Charlie Kirk is dead.
Did you hear that? That was a live stream of the team. We can pull it down. That was a live stream of the TMZ office cheering and clapping and applauding and laughing when the death was announced. Oh, they denied it? It's on video. TMZ denies laughing and cheering. It's on video. Should we play it again? What do you mean they denied it? I can deny wearing a black tie right now. Guess they laughed. They cheered when they heard Charlie Kirk was dead. And they'd laugh and cheer if they heard you were dead or your children were dead or Donald Trump was dead or Alex Jones was dead. These people are showing you exactly who they are. Believe them.
Well, what about all the kids that died from school shootings?
Oh, you know, school shootings happen, so I guess it's fine we killed Charlie Kirk. Are you going to argue with this person? These are not our fellow Americans. They're enemy combatants that happen to live near us.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, no, nothing has changed. And again, the disappointment that none of these people paid any price. Nothing was done to seriously alter the trajectory of American politics. And people might look at that and they might say, well, you know, that's because, you know, people got distracted talking about it being Israel. Yeah, I posted this saying, however you feel about the Charlie Kirk assassination, can we please come together to remember the important thing? We are surrounded by bloodthirsty radicals and they must be crushed. So, like, literally surrounded by the most insane radical psychopaths you've ever seen who will kill you and then demand that you denounce violent rhetoric. We've got to do something about this. And when I say we, of course, I mean the lawful authorities impaneled for this exact explicit purpose. Duh. So it's like, what effect, what power, what influence does Candace Owens have to direct the investigative procedure of the FBI or any local law enforcement or ICE? None, right? If they'd wanted to, they could have seized this opportunity and crushed the left. And anybody speculating about the murder of Charlie Kirk would have had absolutely no impact on that. Now, would that have been easier if, you know, it'd been a unified voice of the right wing all calling out at the same time for investigations of Antifa rather than, you know, debating and bickering about who's actually behind it? No. That wouldn't have mattered. It doesn't matter. Why would that matter? Everybody in the country wants the SAVE Act. It's not passing. 95% of the Republican Party wants mass deportations. It's not happening. We all came together to vote for Donald Trump to do certain specific things. Those things have never happened, are not happening. In fact, the opposite of many of those things are happening. So this isn't about, you know, whatever the people discussing the Charlie Kirk assassination, they're not the ones dictating the actions of the government. That's Donald Trump, Cash Patel, and those people. And this falls firmly in their laps. And if they wanted to ignore this speculation about Israel's involvement and just say this was the left and we're crushing the left, they could have done that. We would have gotten on board. It would have been great. And we could have speculated about Israel's involvement as well, but it doesn't matter because Israel did not force these people to make TikToks celebrating Charlie Kirk's murder. It wasn't Israel cheering in the TMZ room when they heard that Charlie Kirk was dead. Those are the left that represent an existential threat to ourselves and our entire country. And it was the Trump administration that did absolutely nothing to punish them for Charlie Kirk's murder. And by the way, today is July 13th, 2026, and it was, I'm going to say this out, was it 1 year ago? Am I crazy? It was 2 years ago, two years ago today. So to 2024, right? It's like, there's no way it was just 1 year ago. No, it was 2 years ago today. Clip number one here, that Donald Trump almost got his head blown off by yet another lone shooter guy that we're not allowed to ask too many questions about. Let's watch.
Our country, probably 20 million people. And you know, that's a little bit old, that chart. That chart's a couple of months old. And if you want to really see something that said, take a look at what happened. Oh.
No matter what you think of who did any of these or why, one thing should be abundantly clear. America is under attack. Our people are under attack. The defenders of America are under explicit attack. Here's that famous moment. Seems to go a lot slower than I remember it going originally. But it's absolutely incredible. And folks, we can't ignore any of these threats. Yes, we need to focus on Israel because they're the ones dictating our government policy right now and destroying us from the inside and leading us into a destructive war against Iran that they intend to last forever until, you know, we've been completely exhausted. Yes, we have to worry about the Muslims taking over. I've got like 10 different videos today talking about the political tidal wave that's sweeping in of Muslims getting elected all over the country. Yes, we have to worry about the left, transgender, insane, radical assassins running around. Yes, the DSA is probably the biggest, you know, threat we face. And throughout all of these, the champion that we elected to fight back against all of these forces of destruction has failed to do anything tangible to defeat any of it. He is the one getting us into war in Iran. He is the one allowing Israel and the Jewish diaspora to fully take over America. He is the one who declared Antifa a domestic terror group but never did anything about it. We are failing here.
Bigly took 2 years to do this, our great sponsor. I'm not bitching. It's amazing. They got the highest rated. We published the studies, showed it to you, you know, the big third-party testing firms. The highest quality, gravity-fed filters cuts out all the thousands of different prevalent chemicals like atrazine and glyphosate to non-detectable levels, meaning zero, basically. Can't detect it. That's the highest rating with the most beautiful stainless steel. 3-gallon system. You can get the stand if you want to. A lot of people don't even need the stand. Looks great in your kitchen, great at your business, but the most important thing is it cuts all these toxins out. This is the number one thing you should do for your family, for people, your coworkers. This is no more bottled water, no more, you dump swamp water in this, pool water, whatever, it cuts everything out, and it funds the operation. Everybody needs one of these. This is a home run. I am so impressed because I've been bitching at Bigly. Like 2 years ago, we started, go, hey, we need this, here's the ratings, this is the highest thing, I want stainless steel. You can go out and find the company, you know, the manufacturers, go to the, I want the highest quality, lowest price. They're selling crap. They don't even have the good filters. This isn't even stainless steel. It's plastic. For more than this, get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com. Commit to yourself to get the poisons out of the water. It's one of the biggest moves you can make to take control of your life, and it funds this operation. Order it now at thealexjonesstore.com. Take action. And there's a big sale that's going to end Sunday night at midnight. And that is Ultimate Life Force, the ultimate spike protein cardiovascular booster for everybody. That is 50% off. Bunch of other deals. They're going to end soon at thealexjonesstore.com. Widest selection of Patriot apparel and more. and the live feeds of the show are at theauctionstore.com as well.
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here, and he's not f***ing leaving. Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.